Welcome to the Christian Pacifist Podcast, and today we have a special episode. We're going to be talking about the James Holmes shootings that happened in Aurora, Colorado this weekend. James Holmes, a lone gunman, opened fire at a movie theater where the movie was showing Batman, The Dark Knight Rises, the new Batman movie. And first of all, we'd like to give our condolences to any of the victims and their families. We don't want to use this podcast purely to propagate our message in this way, but I did think it was a good chance to think about mass shootings and violence and this incident from the perspective of a pacifist. What is a theonomic pacifist like Kevin Craig? How does he respond to things like this? How should we as citizens respond? And other questions like this. So without further ado, here's our discussion. Kevin, I guess I thought I'd chat with you a little bit. I thought it'd be kind of interesting to get your take on this as a pacifist, and just kind of pick your brain, just kind of think about the post-trauma of this. What were some of your thoughts, your feelings when you first heard about this story?
Well, I think it's good for you to put it in a personal context and think about the people whose lives have been affected in reality. I mean, obviously, you've got a guy here who's living in a comic book world. Yeah. And so you don't want to be too out of touch with reality. On the other hand, I have to admit, my first thinking is always how this is going to be exploited by political forces for political purposes. And so I was definitely thinking that would be more where we'd be going on this podcast.
Yes, definitely. Well, because right away after the story broke out, you have politicians, of course, you know, this, you know, it's just kind of a lack of sensitivity, I think, in some respects. But yeah, politicians right away, I think it was Bloomberg, is the guy, he's anti-gun nut or something. But anyways, Huffington Post and your sort of left leaning people are calling for Obama and the government basically to respond to this with more gun control. So again, the gun control issue gets brought up again. And
it's interesting that you mentioned Bloomberg. I have to admit, I'm really out of the loop. I've been busy the last few months, and I didn't know. I know that he's anti-soda, but I didn't know he was anti-gun. But I guess anybody who's anti-soda would also be anti-gun.
Yeah. So. Why soda and not guns?
Sure.
So. So now here's a crazy thing, because I know you're a pacifist, and so. Seems like pacifists would be against guns. What do you think about gun control?
Well, it's not that a pacifist is against guns. Certainly not. At least omnivore pacifists are not against guns for hunting or so forth. Pacifists are against violence. And so a pacifist would certainly be against the violence that was committed by this nut in the theater. And one thing that's striking to me, the first thing that strikes me is, and I guess you sent me a link to a video, to a CBS report, and it said people in the theater were confused because they thought that the shooting noise that they were hearing was just part of the movie.
Yeah, part of the movie.
And maybe some of the people who were watching this guy, it's hard for me to visualize exactly what happened, but I guess some people who were seeing what was happening maybe even thought that this guy himself was part of the movie or something. I don't know, but a pacifist, when they see some guy, you know, killing people, would jump on the guy, would do something to stop the violence.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that a pacifist doesn't believe in killing somebody as the initial response to some kind of threat or something. I suppose it could be that, I mean, if I were there in the theater, it might be that I would think that this was some kind of a stunt that was part of the movie. I don't know what people were thinking there, but all those people, it reminds me of the alleged scenario on the 9/11 hijackings, that we only had one plane where somebody says, let's roll and take these guys down and, you know, do something. You don't have to kill them, but just tackle them, subdue them, stop the violence, take some action. It's a sad reflection, I think, that so many people either don't recognize violence when they see it, or else they feel like, you know, that's not my job to do anything. I leave that to the government. The government's to protect me, so I'll wait for the government to get here and protect everybody or something. But people don't take action when they see this kind of violence. At least that's, I mean, based on my total ignorance of what happened.
Right.
You're just speculating. Why is it that people who say they're against guns and they're appalled by gun violence don't take action when they see gun violence happening?
Yeah, I think, you know, I can imagine myself in that scenario. I think in some ways you kind of get scared and you freeze. You know, I'm sure that would be a big deal. And like you said, people thought it was part of the show. But also you'd have, I do have this sense of like, oh, we better get the cops down here. You know, we better get somebody from the government down here fast and get this guy. Now, of course, I guess the other thing is he was, I guess, wearing a lot of protective gear, like a gas mask and a bulletproof vest. So the interesting thing is he intended to survive that shooting, at least, you know, for a while. So
in case somebody took him out, you mean?
Yeah, yeah.
In case somebody was carrying.
Yeah, right. So that's kind of interesting. So it's hard because, you know, you think, okay,
we don't know the facts.
Yeah. So, now, do you think then, you know, as we respond to, do you think then society should respond in a different way? As soon as this happened, too, you have all this pressure, and Obama makes a statement and cancels his press conference or whatever, and has a moment of silence and stuff like that, which that's fair. But there's all this pressure on Obama to do something. What do you think about that? The pressure that people put on the government.
Well, the first thing I think of, actually, there's two things I think of. On the one hand, as a pacifist, I'm opposed to violence, and so that's
right.
Why I'm opposed to gun control laws, because gun control laws are enforced by violence. They send out, you know, troops or police or something with guns, and they're told, use these guns on the people who don't give you their guns. And so it is an incitement to violence. It's just more violence. And, of course, the gun control laws are historically used by governments who don't want to be threatened by any kind of revolution. And it's the government that commits far more acts of violence than any lone nut comic book dweebs, or even organized mafias and syndicates and so forth. I mean, the government is the most violent force on the planet. And so a law which aids the state is a bad law. It's a law that results in more violence, a whole lot more violence. So that's why, as a pacifist, I'm against gun control laws. But, let's see, what was the other thing I was thinking? Lost my train of thought. Should take notes here or something. This is totally off the cuff, unscripted.
Yes.
You know, so I lost. You know.
This is raw.
I remember the other one. The other one is why people, so-called Americans, would be asking the federal government to pass gun control laws when the Second Amendment completely bans the federal government from passing gun control laws. And it's such a base part of the American Revolution, which was an armed revolution against the government. And then they said, let's make sure that we never have we're never put in a spot where we cannot overthrow the government. And that's why they have the Second Amendment. We've had this, we had a recent Supreme Court decision, the Heller case, in which people were asking the question, does the Second Amendment allow for an individual right for hunters and sportsmen and gun collectors to have guns? Or, rather than individual right, does the Second Amendment give the right to states to maintain a National Guard or something like that, militia? And of course, the purpose of the Second Amendment was to protect the rights of hunters, because everybody hunted in colonial America except city dwellers. It was to protect the right of the people to engage in a violent overthrow of the government whenever it became a tyranny. That's what the Declaration of Independence says. We have a not just a right, but a duty to overthrow any government that becomes a tyranny and decides to tax tea more than 3 pence a pound. And of course, our government is taking 10 times that amount on every gallon of gas. And by every possible measuring stick, our government is a mega tyranny, far more tyrannical than anything America's founding fathers could have ever imagined in their worst dystopian nightmares. And so that's why the Second Amendment exists, to make sure that the people have the right to overthrow the government. Now, as a pacifist, I'm opposed to violent revolution against the state, even against the worst states. For example, I'm against Dietrich Bonhoeffer's attempt to assassinate Hitler. Okay. The problem is not Hitler. The problem is millions of people who just obey Hitler's rules and wear the German uniform and just do what they're told and kill people because they're ordered to. That's the problem. It's not just Hitler. And if Dietrich Bonhoeffer took out Hitler, you know, the German people would have said, where's our Führer? Where's our leader? Where's our Messiah? Where's our deliverer? So the Bible is plainly against violent revolution against the state.
Yes.
So, but anyway, we're still supposed to, you know, we have the 4th of July. Every 4th of July, we celebrate Independence Day, which in theory is a celebration about the armed revolution against the state. But I'm against armed revolution. But for a nation that still has a Bill of Rights and still has a Second Amendment, it's pretty pathetic that so many people were asking the federal government to give the federal government more power to do more violence in order to enforce gun control laws, largely against those who might have been able to stop this guy, not with a lethal shot, but with at least a disabling shot, and to give more power to the government, take away guns from those who might defend themselves or others. And we know that there's still going to be guns in the hands of those who don't obey the law. Don't obey the gun control laws. Don't obey any laws. So it's just, everything about it is a bad idea. Everything about it is un-American and hypocritical. So it's crazy.
Yeah, it is. Well, yeah, I guess I understand, people who, when you're scared and you want justice, there's this tendency, your first thought, and that I suppose that's what's wrong with our society. Our first thought is, what is the government going to do to relieve me of this anxiety or whatever?
Right. When you say justice, mm-hmm. I think maybe a better word would be vengeance.
Vengeance. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Right. So now. I was thinking about this a little too. Some people say, and I've heard this before, that if it wasn't for the state or the government at least being there to capture James at the end of his shooting round, he would have continued to run amok and shoot up things. What do you think about that? What would be a pacifist?
Again, I don't know the details. I don't know exactly what went down that night, but how did the police get there? How did they know? How could the police know before a whole theater full of people? I mean, why is it the police acted and nobody in the theater acted?
Yeah,
somebody must have called the police.
Yeah. Well, it was interesting as well because there were already police there. For crowd control, just because it was such a big event.
I think
there were two police officers present, and then, of course, people were also calling 911 as people realized what was going on. But still...
Okay, see, that confirms my point. People are calling the government to protect them rather than taking action to protect others. I think that's, you know what? I don't think that would have happened 200 years ago. I think if some nut had walked into a theater full of American colonists and started shooting people, there would have been people standing up and going after the guy.
Right.
I remember Rush Dooney told the story of how, even in New York, 150 years ago, in the 1800s, or even up into the early 1900s, if you had a Brinks carrier who was carrying money, in particular back then, gold coin, and say one of the bags broke and some of the gold coin fell to the sidewalk, a big mess, that there would be people who would kind of like circle the guard and would allow him to collect the coins off the ground and would sort of like protect him, kind of like the guards protect the quarterback from anybody who might try to steal some of the coins. There was just a greater sense of social morality, and I don't see the social morality there. People calling the government, come help us, but nobody's taking action in a self-sacrificing kind of a way. I mean, he's one guy, and he's surrounded, I guess. I don't know the circumstances, but somebody must have had his blind side and could have taken him down. I just don't get that.
Yeah, that is interesting.
And they're just calling 911, but they're not doing anything. Throw your Coke and popcorn at him. At least do something. I mean, these people, obviously they're calling 911, so they must have concluded this is not part of the show. This is something we need to do something about. But instead of doing something about, they're just waiting around for the government.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that points out just a deep problem. I mean, I can even think of myself that would probably be an automatic response, and that's how we've been trained to think in
moments of crisis. Oh, yeah. We've been trained by the government to be dependent, to not take action and let the government take action for us. I think that's bad.
Hmm.
The government certainly doesn't want to train us to be self-reliant and independent. And to take the law, so-called, take the law into our own hands. And see, as a pacifist, I want to stop violence. I don't want to do violence, but I want to stop violence. But I'm willing to take action and do something to try to stop what is clearly a massacre, a very violent scenario.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think the government is the answer, but I think there has to be some social... widespread social, but individual reality, individual responsibility on a social basis. That's what we don't have. Individual responsibility on a social basis. And that's what we need, instead of complete social dependence on the government.
Yeah, definitely. Now, what would you do, let's say we have a pacifist society, and, of course, if we had a pacifist society, I doubt there would be a lot of breakdowns like this. Because you probably wouldn't have the influence of violent movies probably in the first place, but
right, I think so.
But just, I suppose, to entertain the thought, what would we do to catch a violent person run amok? Do you believe in prison and holding someone, for life in some kind of a cell? As a pacifist?
Well, there is some biblical justification for something like that. I mean, that is a legitimate question, because the Bible says that if a man's ox gores someone, and this guy, the owner of the ox, knew that this ox had a tendency to gore people, and he didn't keep the ox in a fence, keep him penned up, then the owner's liable for the death of the victim of his ox. And so if you know someone to be have violent tendencies, if you believe someone to be a threat to others, then you have some kind of responsibility. Now, obviously, one individual might say, well, how can I do that? Lock him in my basement? Well, you do have some kind of responsibility. If you know this guy's about a potential threat, you have to weigh these things. Now, who is this guy's family? And who's on this guy's side, for example? If I decided arbitrarily that this guy is a threat, he's an ox about ready to gore someone, and I lock him in my basement, who is going to look out for him? Who's going to argue his rights and say, oh no, this is unjust? So there have to be systems. There have to be social institutions. If I'm the owner of a theater, for example, I'm gonna hire security guards, I'm gonna hire some kind of agency. In a pacifist society, you're gonna have agencies, you're gonna have systems. They're going to be on a free market level, but there are going to be systems of people who are cooperating and networking with each other to keep track of people. So that, for example, if I get an inclination that my neighbor is a threat to society, I might say to my
child
security
monsters.
System that I've hired, or my neighbor's security system, hey, this guy, we need to watch this guy because I think he's about to do something crazy. There's all kinds of ways that human beings can cooperate and help each other achieve biblical goals. And the biblical goal here is to have some kind of social, the Greek word, interestingly, is an episcopacy, which we get the word Episcopal Church. It means to oversee, to look over, to watch someone, to make sure that bad things aren't going to happen. And then we need to invest in structures. We need to hire help. That's what the free market does best. You hire help to help you discharge biblical responsibilities. So, yeah, I hear that this guy's neighbors knew him to be a social recluse. He never said hi when he, somebody said hi to him. You know, you gotta kind of watch out for people like that. There has to be some kind of community that's looking out.
Yeah, good, interesting. Which actually, on that note, it is interesting because I guess his mom had sort of an instinct, a motherly impulse in the middle of the night. Didn't know this was happening or anything, but woke her up. And she somehow must have known that he would do something like this, because she was identified him right away to the police as well, and flew to Colorado. So I find that kind of interesting. But there would at least be someone who would have known or had some foreknowledge of his tendency there.
Yeah, well, she should have been able to find some help.
Right.
You know, we might think a church, or maybe there we could have a charitable group that is able to go door to door and say, have you hired a security agency? Does your insurance, home insurance, cover these kinds of things? Insurance agencies would be pretty good at establishing systems to be able to help people to guard against these kinds of attackers. But, you know, we need to think as a society on a free market basis, that is, from the ground up, rather than from our shepherds on high to look out for us. We need to look out for ourselves and develop these agencies and support groups and networks that can help us in these kinds of situations.
Right. Well, I think this is good, but I think we could conclude our mini podcast. I just wanted to get your thoughts on it.
Well, it's a good provocative thing. I wrote a short little blog post on a guy in, I think, Georgia, who is on death row. He was supposed to be executed a couple days ago, and now I guess his execution is scheduled for Monday. And I think his name is something like William Ray Lee Jr. or something like that. Anyway, something Jr. And I was thinking, well, where is William Ray Lee Sr. in this guy's life?
Yeah.
And what happened? Where did these social things break down? Why is it that neighbors and communities weren't there helping prevent the grisly murders that he clearly, there's no doubt that he committed. The legal issue is that his IQ was measured rather low, and there's an allegation by his attorneys that he's mentally retarded. And the Supreme Court held, I don't know, 10 years ago that you can't execute a mentally retarded person. It's just that in Georgia, they have set the standard for determining whether a person is mentally ill from preponderance of the evidence to beyond reasonable doubt. So there is some doubt about whether this guy is mentally retarded. Just that his name, William, what's his name? Junior. I'm thinking, well, where's Senior here?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point. If we get back to the law of God, you know, which is clearly laid out in Scripture, there would be a more healthy, vibrant, peaceful society.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Well, and you have to remember now that the Supreme Court has said that public schools, I'll put it this way, the U.S. Supreme Court has said that you and I can't pool our money together, go to a print shop and print up a nice big poster with the Ten Commandments on it, and go to a school and get a teacher to put some space on the wall for us to hang a poster of the Ten Commandments that we paid for ourselves, not paid for by the government. But just to have a poster of the Ten Commandments hanging in a classroom, the Supreme Court has said, oh no, that's way too much establishment of religion. And, you know, the Supreme Court, by its modern separation of church and state mythology, makes it illegal for a public school to teach children that the Declaration of Independence is really true, including the concept of God revealing to us His commandments for us, the laws of nature, of nature's God. So the government, the institution that is supposed to protect us from murder, makes it unconstitutional for us to teach children that thou shalt not murder. So that's insane. It's just crazy. And depending on the government, the institution that says public school teachers can't teach children that God says not to kill each other, to depend on that government agency to protect us from killers is futile. It's nuts.
Yes, yeah.
And obviously, I think we did have, in the past, we had less crime, we had a more peaceful society, we had a society where people weren't afraid to walk the streets, weren't afraid to go into a movie theater or whatever, because schools taught the commandments of God. And they don't anymore, and I think that's going to have a bad effect on our society.
Thank you.